Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for more Season 11, which is, well, the entire season is about giving an excuse for Shamar to go off and get his own show, which more power to him. I am happy he got off and he got his own show, and it's doing quite well. But let's just say that it was not an elegant departure. And we'll get there. But first, let's talk about episodes 4 through 6, which have nothing to do with the overall plot.
No.
So hit me. What's episode 4?
Outlaw. When 3 night shift employees at a Las Vegas, New Mexico diner are murdered in an aggravated robbery arson, and the investigation is linked to a 6-year-old cold case with eerie similarity. Never mind.
What is going on?
No, I can't stand the sentence construction.
Yeah, it's bad. It is, okay. It is not great.
Excuse me. To a 6-year-old cold case with eerie similarities, the BAU suspects both crimes may have been committed by more than one unsub. Okay, that's true.
That's true. It's just they phrased it in the strangest possible way.
Well, it's not only suspects.
Yeah, they have perfectly good evidence that there was more than one suspect.
Well, more than one unsub, and I would assume in their 6-year-old case they knew that too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So,
but anyway, yeah, I know that's a whole other conversation.
It's called shut up, Sheila. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Maybe we should have put this off till next week, you know.
We still can. But anyway.
No.
We're here. Let's talk Criminal Minds. It's interesting because this kind of crime, I mean, it's not an unusual crime, so you can't really say, oh well, it's related to this single real life crime or blah 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 blah, right? It's kind of hard to make that assumption.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is actually a crime that's very similar to this one, which was that famous, it's interesting because there's a famous crime that happened in, I'm trying to remember what state. It's very embarrassing. It's a very famous cold case, because what happened was there was a shooting at a burger joint. And the woman there was raped and murdered, and it was, horrific. And it was not too dissimilar from this case. And I wonder if that's what inspired them. Because famously, and this has nothing to do with this episode, but famously, the next day, 2 guys who worked at another branch of the burger place across town, like, were eating in a restaurant. And one of the 2 guys, offered a toast to the lady who, like, talked about how sad it was that this teenage girl who had worked at the same restaurant as them had been killed. And because this is how America works, a person there's like, that's really suspicious for him to have done. I bet he's the killer. And so they told the cops that he had done this at a restaurant, and the cops picked the 2 guy up and essentially 2 guys up. And one guy's like, of course not. I had an alibi. And he did have an alibi, but they kept the other guy in jail for, 48 hours constantly questioning him until he confessed and implicated the guy whose only sin had been offering a toast to someone who was dead. And they spent the next 20 years in prison while a serial killer was out there continuing to murder people. Because cops are terrible. Just to end.
No. Well, we know where Criminal Minds gets its inspiration, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, but it was so funny that the case that is most similar to this from real life is a case where the wrong guys ended up in prison. I just thought that was worth mentioning. Yeah, I thought that was
of course.
I know.
Yeah, no. I mean,
anyway.
And, I mean, or are they harking back to L.A. Confidential?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think the
you
nicest
know what
way
I
to
mean.
Say it, I say the nicest way. I think the most realistic way to say it is, if you want to talk about this, there is no shortage of horrible cases of this kind of violence. And whether you're looking for a story of the cops doing a good job or a story of the cops absolutely getting the wrong person, there is no shortage of either one. So there you go. I personally fixate on the one where they put the wrong person in jail because I have my own prejudices about cops. But you're right. There have been plenty of cases like this where it was just a horrible situation. The cops didn't do anything wrong. I mean, famously, on my birthday one year, there was the famous Las Cruces, New Mexico bowling alley massacre, which was a very similar crime to this one, where people just shot up a bowling alley. I mean, there's no reason why, because there's not much money to steal in a bowling alley. There's good reason to believe that it had something to do with the guy who owns the bowling alley being involved in the drug trade, but that's a whole other conversation. So yeah, I'm just saying there's no shortage of crimes like this and stories like this, so it's maybe naive for me to say it's based on a specific thing, but that is the case that this is most similar to. When I was thinking of it, this episode itself, I think it's not great, but it is far from the worst thing they've done this year. It's just, I think the thing that sticks with me is just how true.
Gonna say it's only episode four.
It's only episode four. Well, yeah, they didn't have a good last week. But no, I think the thing that is my big takeaway from it though is just how, how virulently unpleasant this episode is, right?
Yeah.
And how just...
completely.
It's just how bleak and awful and wanting to just wallow in misery this episode is. Because there's nothing about this episode that isn't just a brutal, unpleasant slog, you know?
Yeah, for no reason.
For no particular reason, and that's the thing. Like, it's not like there's a good reason for it to be as awful as it is. It's just, no, we want to wallow in misery and awfulness. Like, yeah, this guy's a twisted rapist and his friend loves to murder people. And that's it. That's the whole thing. You know,
that's
the entirety of the story. There is no deeper meaning to this. We don't get into either of these guys' backgrounds really, other than obviously they were abused as kids, you know, and he had a rough time. Why that turns you into a rapist, who knows? That's a conversation for a more well thought out episode and a deeper world to go into, right? But yeah, like the key takeaway when you're watching this episode is just it's wants to wallow in the misery of this situation and the sadness of these families and just it really wants to make you feel sick. And that is the only real purpose it serves. And it bothers me especially because these guys can't have been hard to catch. Like, how could these guys be this hard to catch? And I'll tell you, it's...
Well, it needed to be 42 minutes long.
Well, no, but I'll tell you the reason I say that, right? I know that that's the real reason, but I'm watching the episode, right? And they're bikers.
Yeah.
They're bikers. We see them riding a bike to and from their crimes, meaning that when the cops got there to the place where the crimes had happened, they would see motorcycle tracks and be like, oh, well, we got to be on the lookout for some bikers. And do you know how many, and I actually looked this up, do you mean how many hotels there are or motels there are in Las Vegas, New Mexico? There's like six in the entire city. So literally all you would have to do is drive around and say, any bikers staying in this motel? And then the people in the motel said, yeah, some really creepy looking bikers.
Well, and they would be anyway in a town this small as Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Strangers in town. One of the guys isn't clearly, but
close enough. Yeah, but he's a bad guy who nobody liked when he was in town. So if he was remembered at all, he would be remembered very negatively.
So you're sitting there going, "This is a small town." I couldn't figure out why the FBI got called in.
Well, I think because it was such a brutal crime, they wanted to. But you're right. Like literally, oh my god!
Oh, the guy was a drunk. That's right.
Yeah.
Who is it? Who plays them?
The local sheriff.
Yeah.
He was on The Shield. He's been in a bunch of other stuff.
There's something recent I've seen him in, but I didn't go looking it up.
He's very notable. Like, I've seen him in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And
he's great.
He was drinking. And Joe, of all people, like, I can never understand why they have Joe giving the lectures on alcohol.
I know. It's like, you drink all the time.
It's called the pot calling the kettle black.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you
well,
drink.
Maybe Joe just doesn't drink on the job.
Yeah.
And he doesn't drink at lunch. He just binge drinks on the weekend and at night when he goes home from the job so he can get to sleep.
Oh, yeah. That honestly could be it. Because we know he drinks to deal with his day. Mm-hmm. And I guess the thing that gives him the opportunity to get on his high horse is that he doesn't drink while he's on duty. He only drinks while he's on the plane ride home from doing his duty. I would argue he's still on the clock then, but they all drink on that plane.
Yeah, which just tells you.
Yeah.
So we're going to drink to handle.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, guess what? That's pretty standard. They're not the only ones that do that.
Oh, no, I'm not. I don't want to suggest it's unrealistic at all.
Like, no, it's not. It's just the tone he takes.
Yeah. Well, no, because he's so cold. Like, he's so, his, it's not that he's even bullying, right? It's just that he's trying to think of what's the best way to describe it. Like, because he's not, it is to a certain extent the, oh, well, I know better. I'm the one to put you in your place kind of vibe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like.
And it really is.
And they're, like, you know, it's. I guess what it is that sometimes they have Joe giving somebody, you know, the little talk.
Yeah.
You know, now, and then they do this, which is snarky. So I'm going, I just, it's this lack of consistency this season already. And we'll get all the way to the first six episodes. And I'm so tired now. Maybe I've got a cold. So maybe that's why I'm so tired. That's
definitely factoring in.
Well, maybe, but you know, I have to admit, I watched these episodes.
Yeah.
And I have a question to ask, because the story is pretty straightforward. Yeah. You know, shoot out at the OK Corral. I mean, give me a break, but never mind.
Oh, and I do want to point out that it's like, okay. Again, I actually looked at a map. I did a lot of map looking at when I was reviewing this episode. And here's a fun fact. There's only like four roads leading out of the city. There are 1,000 highway patrolmen in New Mexico. I don't know why these guys were hard to catch.
Well,
they were like they just could have set up roadblocks everywhere.
Yeah, they would have. Yes,
They would have capped these guys right away. But anyway, the question you have is,
question, and this is a decision that had to be made in the editing room.
Right.
Okay. As they're having the shootout, right, and it's coming to, it's an end. They're playing Amazing Grace.
Oh, God, I hated that scene.
And I'm going, what the hell are they playing Amazing Grace? I forgot, of course. And it's this kind of blend into the funeral.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And I'm going, no, you do not start it until after this.
No, because they want us to feel tragic that this guy's sad because his, you know, he never has become a parent and now he's going to be killed. And
why
should
you feel sad?
Exactly. I know, and show, and that's what left the most bad taste in my mouth about the episode.
Hated this episode,
and that's fine. And it's because they want you to get involved with this guy's, like, oh, well, I could have been a father, and blah 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 blah.
Are you kidding? He was a meth addict.
Yeah, he was a meth addict and a rapist. Yeah, a rapist and a meth addict and a serial killer. Yeah, and I mean, he is too, because he was already serial killing before he met that guy. Like, he had been involved in the previous crime.
Right.
Right? And so, what it comes down to is, what on earth am I supposed to, like, how am I supposed to get involved in his drama? Like, I can't. And you're right. It's kind of disgusting that the episode seems to want you to get involved in his drama and care what happens to him.
Yeah. As if somehow or another, his pain because he's living in La La Land.
Yeah.
Is supposed to be the same as the pain of these families who have lost their children.
Yeah. Because of him.
Because of him.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Virgil Williams, what were you thinking?
No. I mean, the thing is, and you're right, is it the editor making the, like, and I think the episode wants to make that connection and wants you to feel that way. And that's, there's no nice way to put it. Just madness.
Yeah,
it's no, madness it is, that we could get emotionally involved.
Like, I don't in this know who Larry thing. Tang. Okay, Larry Tang directed this episode. Right. Virgil Williams wrote this episode.
Like, whose idea was that we were supposed to care what happened to this guy?
And it's like you're looking in the like I'm going, but this happened, of course, in the editing when they're putting it all together.
Of course, yeah.
Right, and somebody told these music guys.
That what they should do is they should blend. We should start. And someone had to tell them, well, we should start feeling sad, right? When, you know, he's the biker is up. Dying. And I'm like, yeah. No, we should not feel sad.
We should not feel sad for him. You should just let him die.
Yeah. And he should then, die as painfully you, as is available. You know, as painfully
move
as
it
possible.
Over.
Yeah. And now we should care about. The people, like, and now let's spend some time thinking about and caring about the victims, like the like, because there's the and people the, he killed, and then there's everybody else as well, right?
Oh well, everybody else and everybody else should be more important. And as course. I said, you know, it's just after, it's really funny, you know, after Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior.
Yeah,
I think that I really turned off. Criminal Minds to some extent. I became much harder on it.
Yeah.
And it also became much worse, so it was easy to be much harder on it. And these little things, but that thing just, and it's so funny, right? Because I'm doing this, well, because we talked about it yesterday, but I'm just working out my lecture for tomorrow night, right? And what I'm going to do is talk about endings. Because I was thinking about the film, this film Come and See that we were talking about. By the way, it's on Prime.
Okay. There's a movie called Come and See about the Russian front in World War II. That it's not relevant to this conversation.
No, not
but
at
apparently,
all.
Apparently it's very good.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
But that
know.
We're not getting into it. Continue.
No. It is relevant to the conversation because the more I think about it, the more I think what was wrong with it too. Was the end. Did you read the New York Times article I sent up?
I did, yes.
Oh, well, he didn't. They didn't like it. you know, they were saying that, I mean, it is a tragic story. I mean, and if you want to get your horror, go watch that one. You know, a whole bunch of people being burned alive in a burning barn. You know, go ahead.
But the point you're getting at is?
But the point I'm getting at is the end was just... not viable, and it ruins whatever point the director and the writer of these short stories, he wrote short stories and about these atrocities that were committed by
Nazis in World War II
in Belarus, Russia, as it was called then. Belarus now, for those of you who don't know where Belarus Russia
well,
is.
Well, why would they?
Yeah,
that's not a country anymore.
Yes. No, it's not. So. Right. And so it's the same thing. Even if, you know, you could, the episode has anything because it kind of follows. Yeah, they're sort of, and it's not all that badly sort of put together, you know, it kind of follows, unlike the next episode, which is just like, what's going on here?
But honestly, this episode, it's just so sickening. It's so sickening.
It's bad.
It really makes you, it turns your stomach and it makes you think, what were these guys thinking that they thought, like, what has to be wrong with your head that you can imagine that there is something tragic about this biker dying?
Yeah.
And you can say, well, we didn't intend it to feel that way. And it's like, well, but the thing is, it's like, well, it's still sad when a guy sees his dad get killed in front of him. And I'm like, not when your dad's that guy.
Not when your dad's that guy and the mother of his son has no illusions.
No, she knows exactly who he is.
And she wants no part of him.
Yep.
And And that's made perfectly clear. And I'm going, you know, like you go, good for you.
Yeah. She knows exactly who he is.
Yeah. And she wants no part of him. You know, your son needs to eat. No, 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 no. Once we get.
Yeah.
No, no. Once I need, what he should have said was, once I need to go out for my next fix of meth, I'll pick up some food on the way home.
Yeah.
Because that's really what was going on. And I'm just like, no. And then playing Amazing Grace, you know, because they focus in on his face. So Larry Tang must have done this.
Yep.
Must have, because he must have sat in the editing room.
Of course.
As they're editing this episode. So he must have done this because he shoots in on the face, because I doubt that the...
He picked that shot. No, no. And I mean, and the thing is, and that's the real question is, what on earth were they thinking? Like, did they seriously think that we were going to get on board with feeling sad that this guy is dead? And if they did think that, which you're right, everything about the episode suggests that must be what they had in mind, which raises the question, what is going on with you Criminal Minds that you think this is how the audience's brain works? It's not sad that this man is dying.
No,
like, it's not. There's no planet on which it's sad. There is no moral framework under which it is sad that this man is dying. It is better that he is dead. If he had been killed in prison, we would all be happier. You know, like there is no bad side to what is happening to this man. Like, this is ultimately for the best for everyone. Right?
Yeah.
The fact that he's dead and the show acts like it's in some way the same kind of tragedy as all of the families looking at the bodies of the people he killed.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's nothing sad about this. And the fact that the show thought there was for even a moment really makes you question the sanity of everybody who works on this show, let alone just the morality of the situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, truly questionable episode.
Oh yeah, it was, and then we had to move on to Night Watch. When a Detroit, Michigan community activist's corpse is incorporated into a macabre piece of graffiti art and an 8-month-old infant is abducted, the BAU juggles connecting the two events to an infamous steel artist known for staying one step ahead of the authorities.
Oh.
Well, no, when you juggle, you have to juggle more than one thing.
No, that's all they were doing was investigating fake Banksy. Okay. That's all they were doing. They were not juggling multiple things. Meanwhile.
Juggles connecting the two events.
Yeah,
no, I know.
But meanwhile.
Meanwhile, Lewis faces pressure on the home front after her relationship with her fiancé reaches a breaking point.
Okay, so this is the episode, and so I watched her reaction to breaking up with her fiancé, and I'm like, oh my god, she's a psychopath.
She couldn't care less.
No, she doesn't. She has no the only thing she's emotionally involved in this world, is finding out more about serial killers. And I'm like, oh my god, they're actually, because there's a real guy out there, and he was on the episode. If you want to see the actual guy I'm about to talk about, he's in the episode Outfoxed. He's the guy giving the speech about the psychopathic brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
About how, and like they interviewed him and they talked to him and they liked him so much, they put him at the start of the episode Outfoxed. Yes. Reed is going to a lecture about the psychopathic brain, and there's this academic giving it. And the twist is this academic has a psychopathic brain.
Yes, we know.
You know.
Well, if you've been listening to our podcast.
Yeah, but we can't guarantee that. We can't assume that. But the point is, so there's this guy, and it's kind of fascinating, because if you read interviews with him, he talks about how, yeah, it's harder to get by in society if you don't assume that you have to care about other people. Because everyone else, you know, is worried about other people. Well, no, it's also harder because everyone thinks he's an asshole. It's easier to get by because you don't care what other people think of you, but it's harder because everyone thinks you're an asshole, but you honestly just don't think, you know, never think about the fact that you're supposed to care about other people and think about other people as much as yourself. And so it's both hard, easier for him and harder for him. And as he said, hey, I've got a wife and I just have to constantly like have her remind me to act like a human.
You watch the beginning. Yeah. She doesn't care that he's going.
Nope.
And the only thing that when you say she cares about is
finding out
serial killers.
Yes.
But you can see she's relaxed and happy when she's with this
guy. Interviewing serial killers. Yeah.
At the end.
Yes. That's my point. So they are setting up something so interesting with Tara Lewis. They're setting up that, she's a psychopath and she has done this kind of work to understand herself as much as anything else.
I don't think she's aware of that.
No. I didn't think she's aware of it.
No, I don't think
But I think that's what they're getting at with the character. And I honestly thought, and you could read my reviews as I review each episode watching it for the first time, I think knowing about the existence of that academic, knowing that the show knows about that academic, the only logical place it seems like they're going is doing a fake version of that academic.
Yeah.
And so for the rest, and there's going to be something that happens next episode that really suggests they were going that way. And I, in my headcanon for the show and in the way I think of the show, yes, Tara Lewis is a psychopath.
Yeah, I think that that's a
fair reading. I think it's a fair reading of the facts.
Because people make the mistake of thinking, you know, that all psychopaths are sociopaths.
No.
Are criminals and all the rest of it. But they're not.
The vast majority are not.
No, the vast majority are these sociopaths or psychopaths, whatever you want to call them. You know, these people.
Antisocial personality disorder, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
There's plenty of words for it.
Yeah, they just have no real. No. Understanding of other people's.
To them, on a certain level, everything is math, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like they don't care, you know? And fundamentally, like they just don't care. Other people are just tools to them, the same as any other tool. It doesn't bother them. Like they, because other people aren't real to them, right? They can do whatever they want. They don't feel guilt in the normal way. That's not to say they don't have normal emotions. It's just they're less likely to have the emotions that are related to your feelings of other people. Psychopaths don't feel shame as much, right?
Yeah.
Like pure psychopaths don't feel shame as much because that's related to how society sees you. Right? They don't feel bad about the bad things they do because why would they? And that is what you get from Tara Lewis in this episode.
Yeah, Tara Lewis is...
Like, she's been treating her fiancé terribly for a long time. He's finally had enough of it. And she's like... and her only reaction is, I don't understand why you're not behaving the way I would prefer you to behave.
Yeah, we'll talk about this tomorrow.
And he's like, no.
Like, no, I'm gone.
Yes, I'm leaving. And it's like, you're completely on his side because of how she responds and the fact that she jokes about it with her work friends the next day. And you're like, Jesus Christ, what is wrong with this woman?
Yeah.
And what's wrong with is she's a psychopath.
Well, I mean, what's so funny is when the serial killer that she's interviewing says to her, so you did this, so you chose me over him. No, I chose me.
Me. No. That's not true at all.
it was kind of
funny. It's funny, but it's just fascinating because it's like there's this level to the character where you're like, do they not know?
Well, the thing is that there may have been some idea of doing that because, as you say, in the next episode, which we'll get to, she is also. There's this lack of understanding emotionally, but we'll get to that, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, in these two episodes, you're going, okay, now she's not a regular cast member
yet.
She was supposed, okay, but she was supposed to, you know. So I think that somehow or another, somebody decided because they do kind of just let that go.
Yeah.
You don't see an awful lot after this year. You don't see an awful lot. She just becomes generic crew member.
Yep.
and like everybody else. But here she's not like everybody else.
No. And that's what's so fascinating about
it. Yeah, and it is. And for these two episodes, and because they might have thought she was going to be just a temporary until they found somebody else.
And so they flattened her out when they
turned her into a full cast member, then they just flattened
her
out.
They abandoned. Oh, yeah.
Heaven forbid that anybody, you know,
do anything complicated here.
You're
right, because had they been willing to do this story about having a psychopath on the team, it would have taken some difficult writing. And it would have been harder for them to write than it would be hard to write how screwed up, because think about it, right? Think about how screwed up Reed's relationship with his mother is and how incapable the show is of dealing with that, right? Yeah. Now try to imagine these same writers who can't even deal with that trying to deal with the fact that one of the people on their team is a psychopath.
Yeah.
Of course they couldn't deal with that.
You know, yeah.
You know, of course they were completely incapable of dealing with that. You know, I'd be shocked I so wanted them to try this interesting thing. But honestly, I would have been shocked if they had been willing to try to do this thing.
Yeah. This is taking us away from the main episode.
No, but I mean, this is the most interesting part of the episode. This is a very stupid episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's just give me a break.
It's a deeply stupid episode. I mean, and it's a deeply stupid episode where not only does the team accomplish nothing, they probably get both those people killed.
Yeah.
Right? And there's no kind way to say that. And we'll get to there in a second. I just want to finish off this Tara Lewis stuff. We'll talk about it a bit more in the next episode. But I just want to say that it's like, this episode gave me a reason. And that's why it's so frustrating, is the beginning and the ending of this episode gives you a reason to be excited about Criminal Minds in a way that you hadn't been for a while, just because there's something so obviously deeply wrong with Tara Lewis.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, this is going to be good. And then it isn't. And then it's never good. Well, and I mean, the main point, we're going to talk about it a little next time. And we're going to talk a lot about it at the end of the season, because they set up something and then don't pay it off in the most dramatic frigging way possible, to the point that it's insulting to the audience. But we'll get there. So this episode, Banksy is killing people. But then it's not, it wasn't Banksy after all. It was Banksy's husband.
Yeah.
The end. It's such a stupid episode. Like, there's no good way to describe this episode. It is just complete nonsense. Especially, oh my God. So at the beginning of the episode, there's this
you
other.
Really
so,
want to talk about this?
I mean, I have to a little. Okay, we have to talk about this one a little. It's such a stupid episode. You can kind of dismiss it entirely. But anyway, a guy's killing people and putting them out, and he kidnaps a baby and blah 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 blah. Right, and at the same time, right, another artist, like another street artist, found the art, right? And then they're like, and so they say to him, how did you know where Banksy's art was before he announced it? And he's like, Banksy's getting tired. I can predict what Banksy's going to do. And everyone's like, that's insane. How could you possibly think, like, there's no way you could know where a random piece of street art was going to go up. That's just not how anything works, unless you know the person. And so they think, wait a minute, maybe he was the one working with Banksy, right? And so they're like, maybe he's involved in these crimes. And so they find the next thing, which is the baby's mobile murder, and the guy's dead there, and it's like, oh, he wasn't working with Banksy, it was this ex-con who was working with Banksy. But then you leave open to the question, how did he know where the art was? Like, they use the fact that he knew where the art was to assume that someone was working with Banksy and assumed it was him and they were going to use him to find Banksy, right? But then it turns out he wasn't the one that was working with the Banksy. So they just, the episode uses the fact that he couldn't have known where the art was to get us around to the idea that Banksy must be working with someone. But then once we find out he wasn't working with she wasn't working with that person, they expect us to forget that that means the guy had no way to find out where the art was. and they just expect us to let that go. Like, no, if he wasn't working with them, if he wasn't involved in this crime spree, how did he know where the art was? And the show has no interest in explaining that and no interest in
But please. Yes. No. But then how did the husband find her?
Oh, no, we haven't even gotten to the husband yet.
You know, because that's the upshot of this. If he wasn't working with female Banksy.
Yeah. And he wasn't working. It's like. How did the husband
find her? Because the whole Sky was to find out where he was going to torture him and find out where his wife was.
But that guy didn't know. But here's the question. The husband does find out because he tortures and kills her actual assistant, right? In the hotel room.
Yes.
That's how the husband found out. But the question is, how did the husband find out about that guy? And there's no, like, you can't imagine that the husband had any way to find out about that guy. So, even if you know how the husband found her, he tortured and killed that guy, it still leaves the big question, how did the husband find out about that guy? And, like, how did he find the random hotel that guy was staying in? Like, are we expected to believe...
Considering he was living down in the bayou.
Exactly. Like, he was living in, like, the middle of nowhere. Up until 5 minutes ago, he found out that Banksy was doing these crimes in Detroit. I almost said Chicago, sorry. Doing these crime paintings in Detroit. And so he zipped up there. And, like, the minute he gets there, he finds out about this other street artist. And then he finds out about the assistant who works for Banksy. And then that guy tells him where Banksy. It's like... Has he ever even been to Detroit before? He's doing a lot of good work.
Here's what I would say. If this was Las Vegas, New Mexico, maybe.
Yeah, it's not enough but time. It's Detroit. And can you tell me why on earth? So they tell her, right?
Yeah.
They tell her. They tell Banksy, BT Dubs. I mean, they don't know they're saying this, but what they're saying to her is, your husband's the one doing the murders, right? That's what they tell her, and she now knows her husband is the one doing the murders. Why does she, like, not immediately tell them or possibly skip town? Yeah. And she's like, oh, your husband's tracking you down and planning to kill you. Oh, well, then I'll just go back to my work. Like, why are you going back to your workshop? What is this woman doing?
Well, she's living, remember? She's another one living in La La Land. She became Banksy so she could even forget she was the person who had let her 2-year-old son die. Down.
Yeah, yeah. And this is what bothered me so much about the episode, which again is a very stupid episode, is that the end of the episode, they make it clear that she is successfully talking her husband down. 100%, she has talked her husband out of killing her and the baby.
Mm-hmm.
That is clear from the episode. And then Hotch shows up and points a gun at them, and he's like, oh well, and he kills the both of them. So not only did they not save the day, she had saved the day. And I don't know if the actors just decided to play it that way, the two actors, but you can't look at their performances and think anything other than, okay, he was ready to surrender by her talking to him. And then Hotch walks in and they both die. To me, that's problematic. And the show acts like, oh, well, it was unavoidable. Like, it was just a bad situation. It wasn't unavoidable. No. We watched her talk him down.
Yeah. But the FBI is all about saving the government money in trials. That's all I could say about that episode. And now I am going to tell you, as I keep thinking about these first two episodes, I'm going, nah, it's not because I've got a cold or I've got really bad allergies. It's because this episode was worse than the previous episode for different reasons.
Yeah. For different reasons. That episode had a terrible, awful message, right?
Yeah.
But had this a terrible, awful, disgusting message. This episode is just dumb from beginning to end.
Well, it just, if you can't, you're trying to follow it and you're just going, like, I do like to have at least a little bit of ability when I'm watching these shows to be able to kind of follow what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And at least in the previous episode, if you want to follow what's going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it all tracks.
You've got this trail of blood and gore and horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yes, you can track what's going on there.
Oh, yeah.
Here, you just like, but, okay. Okay.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
This is why the Tara Lewis stuff is so much more.
Is so much more captivating. Because this episode is just, it's dumb from beginning to end. Nothing that happens makes sense. There's no logically tracking. Nothing she does makes sense. You don't believe the husband could pull off anything he pulled off. Like, seriously?
I mean, look at him. Seriously, this guy pulled this stuff off?
Pulled all of this stuff. And seriously, he walked into a house in Grosse Pointe. That's outside of Chicago. That's outside of Chicago. Whatever the high tone suburb of Detroit is, he's able to just walk up to a building and just walk in and take a baby and nobody notices it in the middle of the day. This guy? No, come on. That's just ridiculous.
I don't even know how this guy managed to make the macabre piece of graffiti art.
Oh, I know. Like,
how did he do that?
Oh, you mean the giant mobile with the rival artist at the center of it?
No, even the first piece.
Oh, the first piece. Yes. No, you have to have a team of people to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
You just do. You have to have a team of people.
That first piece, he can't do that on his own.
No.
The second piece, he can't do that on his own.
Yeah.
Unless he's got a whole array of pulleys and everything else, and then was really nice and cleaned up and put all of those things back where they belong after he was finished. He doesn't look, because I will give you this. They didn't say anything about him escalating.
That's true.
That's true. Somebody forgot to put that in the episode. Oh, I'm just being pissy, it was just, you know, well, yeah, no. Jeez, somebody forgot to have someone say, but he's escalating, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously
escalating. He's decompensating. He's breaking down.
He's breaking down.
But he never did. He had an elaborate plan, and he pulled off every step of his elaborate plan.
Yeah.
You know?
Successfully.
And it's like everything he wanted to do, set out to do, he accomplished. And the crazy part is, as I said, had the team just stayed home, there would have been a better result, because his wife would have talked him out of killing himself and her. You know? That's what we're left with in the impression of the episode. We're left with the impression that the team's arrival on the scene has only had negative consequences. Which is rough.
Supposedly there is a Grosse Pointe in Detroit.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure I'm not thinking of
that. I would have thought.
Wait, maybe Grosse Pointe. Maybe Grosse Pointe is the one in Detroit, and there's another one. You know what? Let's assume I was right about it being Grosse Pointe and move on. But yeah, no, it's a
Dearborn
terrible episode.
Heights is the one I was.
Dearborn. Oh, right. Okay.
Dearborn Heights is the one
you were thinking of.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, okay, it's not a good episode. Let's move on. No, I mean, it really is. I just want to say that it's basically just trash.
Yeah.
It's just not a good, it's so frustrating because it's nothing that happens this week makes sense. Honestly, the three episodes we're going to talk about, nothing really makes a ton of sense at all. Right?
Of these three episodes, this is the worst sort of.
It's the low point. It's the low point. I would agree with that. So. Let's move on to
Pariahville.
Oh God.
When a registered Florida sex offender is stabbed to death in her house and found dressed wearing a cheerleader uniform, the BAU finds themselves faced with the daunting task of interrogating the over 2,000 residents of a community designed to house nonviolent. It should say sex offenders. It just says offenders, but it should say nonviolent sex offenders. Meanwhile, Lewis receives a career opportunity that threatens to take her away from the team.
Okay. All right, so this episode. Oof. It's a rough one. I mean, it's not the worst episode of the season by far. No. But there are a couple of problems with it, and I'll start with problem number one. When we find out, and I mean, spoiler alert, we're going to tell you who the killer is. We're assuming you watch it. I'm just being silly. So here's the problem.
It was homework. If you don't do your homework, it's your problem, not mine.
I know.
That's what I tell my students.
Okay. So here's my problem with the episode, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So we find out the episode, at the end of the episode, who the killer is. I'm like, okay, well, how did they not know right away? Because she had to have called the Geek Squad. Like, she called the Geek Squad to work on a computer, and then he showed up and murdered her. But they don't run her phone records. Like, shouldn't they have immediately found out who the killer was? Just by virtue of the fact that she called them to work on the computer? Am I crazy here?
She's a registered sex offender.
So they didn't bother looking at her phone records?
They don't want to. They don't want to bother.
Yes.
They don't even want to be there.
Yeah, but it's weird how obvious the, like, okay, well, and the thing is, it's like, he's a guy who comes to people's houses to work on their computer, and so he's alone in there, but it's like, he's not hard to catch at all. He literally, he got called by her to work on her computer, he walked into her house.
And killed her.
He was parked on the street, and it took him, given the crime we see him having committed, you know, butchering her and then... what do you call it? And then dragging her bloody corpse into the bathroom and dressing her up in a cheerleader uniform and all that. Right? Like, all of that has to have taken 45 minutes.
Yeah, which would have been about the time to have to fix the computer, an hour or so, you know. Yeah,
but my point is, like, that's... you would have noticed a car parked on the... like, this is a town
actually, the guy
full of
the
sex
street.
Offenders.
Yeah, the guy across right, the street did.
But my point is, this is a town full of sex offenders. Nobody visits. They get no visitors. These people are incredibly insular. They're incredibly community-minded, right? And they, if someone is in town, more than any other part of town, really, if someone was in town who didn't belong there, they would notice right away. So it wouldn't take the pedophile across the street to notice that there had been a Geek Squad truck Geek Squad car in the neighborhood. Everyone would have noticed. And he would have been caught immediately. Yeah, so it's like the whole episode, when you find out how he got in there without being noticed, like, well, no, he would have been noticed right away.
Yes.
Of town, there's no way you could not notice.
Okay, what I was going to say, right?
Please.
This was not a problem. Nobody bothered asking.
Yes,
and
obviously.
Nobody's going to listen to these guys because the FBI is as you can see, the only person here who
has any sympathy towards these people's situation at all
is Tara Lewis.
Yeah, is Tara, who, of course, well, you know, she's got her own problems.
Yeah, but I don't think that's it. They all come in here and just figure it's going to be one of these people.
Yeah, exactly.
And, right. You know, and we get the little tangent of he put the chip in them and... you know,
he put a little chip in to make sure that they didn't, yeah.
Yeah, right? Leave. It's just putting an ankle bracelet on them instead,
yeah, exactly.
But it's a chip, right? And, but they all agreed to it, so what's your problem? But no, the FBI, this particular BAU team came in here, and they had already decided it was a sex offender that had done this.
So they didn't do legit investigating.
Yeah. No, this is because... right? Because, and yet, this is for nonviolent offenders. And they did sort of mention sex offenders. They did sort of mention that, kind of, well, yeah, but I guess somebody's turned to murder. Oh, Jesus, Murphy?
I know.
I mean,
it's like, by the way, people generally, I mean, I know that escalation isn't the easiest thing to judge, but people generally escalate from the stuff to from peeping and stealing underwear to rape to murder. They generally don't go straight to murder.
No, and what happens,
as a general rule, when you're dealing with this kind of offender?
And well, what happens, and it's sorry. Not just that. One of the things that sets them off, because the question is keeping it under control. Yes. And as long as you are in a situation where you don't, because nobody comes in and because they don't have to deal so much with everything they deal with if they're in a regular neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now that all sex offenders in the U.S. have to, it register. Has to be told. It's not just registered, but it has.
You have to inform. Yeah.
You have to inform, right?
Yeah, the Megan's Law stuff.
You know, we saw that problem dealt with in the first season much better. But,
yes.
You know, it's what's happened. And it's all right that the daughter, you know, that's the one thing. Like, I bought a good portion of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
But what struck me, like, I bought this episode. I bought the Tara, and they set this thing up. And the preacher is trying real hard to get this going. Yeah. And it's all going to fall apart now.
Well, I think, I'm being very hard on the mystery solving part of it because the mystery is so dumb. But like the emotions of this episode play really well.
Well, like the whole episode, from my perspective, plays really. I mean, once you sort of set aside the fact that a stranger coming into this town,
neighborhood,
or somebody coming into this neighborhood to fix a computer, they would have all, but more than one person would have noticed it. And it took the BAU a long time to get off of their duffs and off of their assumption that it had to be somebody in the community.
Yes. And by the way, it's weird that the characters don't really acknowledge that it was their own prejudices and assuming it was one of these sex criminals, right, that honestly allowed that second girl to die.
Yeah.
Because they could have solved this immediately.
Or pretty quickly.
Almost. Again, a check of her phone records would have solved this crime.
Well, what if
you would have said, the Geek Squad was there. Let's phone up the Geek Squad. Oh, the Geek Squad guy who got assigned to go to her house is a sex criminal?
Yeah.
Well, problem solved.
Problem solved. Yeah, not only that, their profile was all wrong.
Yeah, completely wrong.
You know, and they get 2/3 of the way through the episode before, well, maybe our profile is wrong.
Yep.
Well, duh, you think? Jeez.
I know, but I mean, that's what's so frustrating about the episode. It's like, you guys not bothering to do the basic kind of research into this case got an extra woman killed. Well, teenage girl killed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, and you know, and thank heavens the brother told.
Oh, yeah. But I actually have a question about that, right?
Yeah.
Which is, how on earth is, they make such a big deal about how secure, because he knows he lives next to this neighborhood, right? How secure the police chief keeps his house, right? They make such a big deal about that in the episode. And so my question to you is, how did the alarm not go off when this serial killer dragged this girl back into her own house?
Well, no, he must have made her turn off the alarm.
Except every alarm on the planet has a code. This is just a true fact.
She could have put in the wrong
code. No, not the wrong code. Like, so let's say your code is 1234. If you type in 4321, then, by the way, this is a fun fact about how 99% of these codes work. If let's say your code is 1234, if you put in 4321, everything will look like it has been disarmed. But actually, it has been turned to silent, and they have been sent not only just an alarm, they have been sent an alarm letting them know that you are under distress.
Yeah.
And that they should not call the house. They should just rush over.
Yeah.
It's called a distress code, and it is the code backwards.
Yeah.
So he would say, put in the code to disarm it, and she would put in the distress code, and they would have all, like, 100 cops would have been on their way. because it's the sheriff's house.
And so, yeah, she, like, given how smartly she dealt with him,
how, oh yeah, this,
then
this
she
character,
should have done
she
that.
She wouldn't have not, no, she's yeah. smart enough to completely manipulate him. She's smart enough to go for the shotgun. This yeah. girl, no, has, she has been fully prepped for this situation by her father. And all they have to, and there's no reason, like, character-wise, they can't just have it say, we just got a distress code from your house. Like, in the episode, there's no reason they couldn't yeah. have said that.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been fine. And for some reason, they don't. And I can't tell you why they didn't. I don't have any clues
because
to offer.
Because probably Eric Stiller didn't know anything
about
how
this
stuff works, right? And the distress right. code.
But you're
and
right.
As we know, they don't do any research anymore. They just do sort of have this basic understanding. Yeah. So, I mean, there are, as I said, there are a couple of little things.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, given that it's always difficult. This is a difficult issue of what you do with sort of these registered sex offenders, you know, and they've gotten different places. And I was looking up some of this stuff online at one point, right? And, you know, and then so Washington State actually has an island for violent sex offenders. God,
right.
that must be horrible.
I know.
Because, you know, and then, I mean, the biggest concern is how much this is costing people. Well, yeah, you think it's going to cost them anything, any less putting them in a prison on
in a prison? No, of course it's going to cost. I mean, it can't be as expensive as having them take up prison cells. Like, there's
can't
just no way it
more
could.
Expensive than that. And, yeah. and plus, I mean, even if they escape, where are they going to go?
Exactly. They're on an island. People yes. are going to notice if they try to escape. Yeah, I mean, that's what, I don't remember if it's Norway or Denmark, but one of the Scandinavian countries did that too, and it works fine.
Yeah, just I mean,
give the sex offenders their own island.
Yeah, and they're, you know, there's some.
Well, mean, it's yeah, not like they're not. It's not like they're not supervised. They're supervised.
There are still, but they're at least they're away from the regular population, and that's
exactly.
it. And
yeah,
some because, of them are there basically for life.
Oh yeah.
And,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's,
I mean, and this episode, it deals like, I almost am angry that the main plot, like the mystery plot is so, you know, kind of frustrating because as I call it just stupid, but you're right. It's more than that. It's a missed opportunity to force the team to look at how they don't take, like, how they have their own preconceptions and they don't come in clean.
Yeah, and they right. don't come in clean. And what happens because of that, you have this other teenage girl and then yeah. you have the cop's daughter almost get killed.
Yeah, all because they couldn't be bothered to come in with a set of fresh eyes and actually consider the situation because they came in assuming that one of the sex offenders did it.
Yeah.
People die.
Yeah. And they did that right when they were on the plane before they even yeah. left.
Yeah, and there's no reckoning to that, right? There's no acknowledgement that they were part of the problem here.
Yeah.
And if they had, you're right. It was like, it's an opportunity to call out their own issues. It's an opportunity for the characters to personally grow, and they completely botch it, which, yeah, but you're right. Like, because the stuff they do with the priest in charge or the minister in charge is, mm-hmm. is well done. The fact that Tara takes it seriously, that these people need to have somewhere to go.
Yeah.
Is that's all well done. Like, it's actually fairly sensitive. One thing I didn't buy at the episode at all is that it's like, wait a minute. He only flashed women when they were with their kids. That must mean he was actually a pedophile.
Yeah,
and that's a twist. And I'm like, yeah. No. Here's the thing. No cop is going to hear that a mother and child were flashed and not assume that it was the child he was trying to flash. Because guess what? Whether he claims he was only trying to flash the mother or not, according to the cops, you just sexually assaulted a child.
Yeah, well, in fact, the BAU
yeah.
would make that assumption, obviously, given all the assumptions they make here.
Yeah.
But anyway,
no,
yeah.
all cops would. If you show your genitals to a child, that is they're going to charge you the harsher way.
Yeah.
I don't care that the child's mother was there. They're not going to say, oh, well, he was only trying to flash the mother, so we're not going to charge him with flashing a child. That's not how cops work. That has never been how cops have worked. And so the idea that they act like this is a revelation is crazy.
Well, dealing with that, their pedophile from across the street was the weakest. Well, no, the weakest part was their assumptions and getting people killed. But the way that is written too, you know, you just, okay, you know, why not just make him a flasher of children? What difference does it make?
And I'll tell you why. And it's this very stupid thing that happens in the episode where they're like, they try to help get, and I mean, it's a tough thing to get the audience on side for the plight of these people in the sex offenders village, right?
Right.
But the point is, yeah, they try to say it's a sex offender village, but there are no pedophiles there. And I'm like, what? Well, then who's it for?
Yeah.
Because if there's no violent offenders and there's no pedophiles, what's left? Because, by the way, the woman who got murdered was having an affair with, I mean, we only see that she was caught making out with, but still, like a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
She's a pedophile, a pedophile, but the point is, she's a child molester too. Why are they acting like, we never would have let him in if we knew he was flashing children. Why'd you let her in? She was making out with a 15-year-old.
Well, yeah, but that was a boy. And not a child.
No, but it's like, I understand them when no violent people are allowed. But I hate to say this, if you're going to have a town for pariahs, you have to let in pedophiles. They're the pariahs.
Yeah. Particularly the ones that only flash children.
Yeah. No, but it's like, I hate to say it, but it's like, because they don't let in rapists, they don't let in child molesters, but you should be letting in guys who are peeping on children and are exposing themselves to children. That's who this kind of place should be for, because if there are no pedophiles here, and there are no violent sex criminals here, I don't know how there could possibly be a community. Because how many other sex crimes are there that aren't violent at all?
And there are over 2,000 people in the community.
That's my point.
I know. This
should be pedophile town. Realistically. Because guess what? The real, like, tent cities of sex criminals, they're mostly pedophile town.
Well, yeah, and that's the, there's a whole bunch of flaws about, you know,
the way this episode is constructed.
Yeah, about how it's set up, right? Because, yes, and it is, you know, not separated. They're all, I don't know, there are some of them on parole, like I'm trying to think of it still.
Well, no, but I mean, I think it's I think once you're a registered sex offender, you stay a registered sex offender forever.
Oh, yeah. No, forever.
Yeah. It's a real scarlet letter type of situation.
Yeah. And that gets to be very, that's very problematic. People should go watch sometimes with this, well, it's a black and white culture, right?
Yeah, it is.
Lisa Ling, I think is her name. She does this show on...
Yeah, she does that show and she visited one of these
CNN.
Towns.
On CNN. No, it's not just that. She was talking to some of these teenagers who ended up getting this sex offender.
Oh, no. Because they're sending...
14 or 15 because they really...
Take selfies and such.
Well, or... No, even this one guy, right? He says, but I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it's like, it's hard to imagine, like, in a culture of quote unquote sexting, it's hard for a 14-year-old to understand that for the rest of their life, they're going to be branded as a sex offender because they sent a naked picture of themselves.
To another 14-year-old.
Yeah. It's like, well, you produce child pornography, but I am a child.
Yeah.
You know, like, you distributed child pornography, but I'm a child giving a picture of myself to another child. Like, I understand the bind those kids get put in, and you're right, the laws really should reflect that.
Yeah. It was, it's something else to go see. It's a little documentary. It's very good. It's just the CNN show. I mean, she does some really interesting things, some really weird things. So it's...
No, this, the town featured in the town, show, like, yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, And I know why they had to say, and it's entirely because realistically, this town would be pedophile town. Like, just realistically, that's what this town would be for.
Yeah.
Right? And this show has to make it not be pedophile town because they need the audience to feel sympathy for these characters.
Exactly.
But it's like, guys, accept the challenge.
You know? And the fact that the Baptist, that this minister, I mean, there are Mennonites down in Southern Ontario who actually have taken in pedophiles, right? Pedophile offenders to, and, but it is a walking with them. It's like this sort of thing, right? And as they, I can remember listening to an interview with this one man, and he just said, well, it's hard. He said, but I've always got somebody, there's always somebody there. Now, I mean, the Mennonites are the Mennonites. Like, they are truly, all I can say is that they go over and beyond, and that's what, and often.
Well, they live it. That's the thing. They live it fully. They fully and, live the code.
Yeah. And you know? So what happens? But here, I mean, I have to wonder, this had to, probably they had to do it. It may not even be for the audience and to try and get the audience into the plight. There's all sorts of things that they left out because it really is a problem putting sex offenders in with other sex offenders.
Yep.
Anyway, right. So you've got the preacher, and the preacher, of course, is running the town. And yeah, some of them are not too happy with the, but they get the chip out after 5 years. So,
yep. Once they can be trusted, once they've fully proven themselves.
And they have to commit. I mean, he goes through all of these things and picks out who he thinks would be a good candidate.
Yeah.
And so it's not even, they're probably not even the bad ones. But I think even a few of these other things like that you're talking about with, well, yeah, but we couldn't take in pedophiles. Would have been something that if you hadn't put that in standards and practices, you know, would have never let the, I think that there's, you know, the audience could buy into this, although why they would buy into this woman who had been involved with a 15-year-old boy.
Yeah. Is not somehow not a pedophile. Suddenly.
Yeah. Somehow or another, she's not, she doesn't, but that's again, this discrimination, this whole business of what being masculine means.
Yes, right? Yes, and you're right. Being, and it comes down to like, well, women are the victims of sex crimes, and you
not
know,
men.
If and not men. Yeah, and but I mean that's a whole other toxic masculinity culture thing that we're going to get to another time.
Well, we'll probably
that can't
have...
be what this focus is.
No, yeah, this isn't. Gonna... But this isn't. That's not what the focus. I mean, she's she pays the ultimate price. She gets killed
she
right at the beginning.
At the
right.
The
so yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And, but yeah, I mean, how it wasn't found, like we've already discussed those flaws, how it wasn't, you know, they went into this with a massive prejudice that didn't allow
a bias. Yeah.
Massive bias that didn't allow them to follow what the protocols they should have followed, which would have meant that one girl didn't get
die.
Killed.
Yeah. They could have saved a life. Had they actually investigated the crime instead of
the
just
way they
assuming
were
what
to.
Everybody else assumed? Like, had they actually assumed, not assumed what everyone else assumed and just investigated the crime, a life would have been saved. So, good work on that one, Criminal Minds. Also, and I know this is like the most silly, fiddly thing in the world, but they did such a bad job of staging the murder photos that you've got this bathroom that is completely coated in blood in every part. And the woman in the cheerleader uniform, there is not a drop of blood on the cheerleader uniform. How did you stage this badly?
Because somebody forgot. And
it's like, I try to imagine the actress getting into the cheerleader uniform and lying down in the tub. And like this must have taken 45 minutes and no one noticed. Oh, by the way, there's no blood on you.
Like nobody noticed this? Like, I mean,
well,
I mean,
like, well, he put
can happen. It can happen.
Because
this is really stupid. I mean, this is a big. I mean, I know
it's a big one to miss because the thing is, he put on the uniform after she was dead. Oh well, there would be even more blood on it because he got this woman naked. He brutally stabbed her to death. There's blood all over her body, and he, with bloody hands, pulled this uniform onto her, and still somehow there's no blood on the uniform
anywhere.
How is that possible? All right, so let's just go back to Tara Lewis for 1 second at the end.
Uh-huh.
I suspected, based on the previous episode, that she was a psychopath. Entirely based on her cold affect, the horrible way she treats her fiancé, and the way she seems only at peace when she's talking to other psychopaths.
Yeah.
And in the very next episode of the show to feature her, this episode, she essentially, like, makes a wacky joke before killing someone, kills someone, and then demonstrates no emotional reaction to having killed someone.
Oh, is that the first time? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine.
My entire life has been as an academic. I just made a joke to distract someone, then shot him in the face. And it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying she should go into counseling.
But the fact that there's something wrong with this woman.
Well, yes.
There is something deeply wrong with this woman. And you see why after that first episode, I thought she was a psychopath. After this episode, I was sure of it.
I know. It's fascinating. It is fascinating to watch what I think somebody might have thought they were going to do with this. I
swear they thought they were going to do something interesting with her.
Yeah.
And then they never did.
Yeah, because the one thing that she would have, because she had never killed anybody before. And this would set her up for that potential to actually enjoyed it.
Exactly. And it, like, she's going to start obsessing over, did I enjoy this?
Yeah.
Because, and she's going to understand the people she or kills. Is there something wrong with me?
Yeah.
Later this season, she's going to kill someone else she didn't have to shoot.
Yeah.
Right, she's going to shoot someone that she absolutely did not have to shoot. Like, there's a situation, I'm not going to get into it, where a man was putting nobody else in danger, and she shoots him, and she is rewarded for having done so. And I'm like, they're really setting up something dark with Tara here. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't.
It's really interesting, because that's the thing. Well, we'll talk more about, I think, that
potential. Oh, no, the Tara Lewis.
Later on.
Yeah, that episode's coming up. There's other stuff to talk about Tara Lewis. But it's just, it's fascinating to me that they're so, and I have to imagine that between the previous episode where the only thing that brings her peace is talking to psychopaths and this episode where she kills someone and they point out that she has no emotional reaction to having killed someone, the writers, like, at first I thought, is it just me after they didn't, like, cause you gotta remember, I wrote the reviews when I first watched the episode, and it's a full season later that it becomes clear that they have no interest in doing anything with this character other than just have her be a generic member of the team. And so, you know, I'm 3 months away from having written these reviews where I talk about how she's obviously a psychopath. And so I start, am I not remembering this right? Was I getting ahead of myself? But watching these two episodes back to back, I feel they had to know they were setting something up, right?
You know, if it was any other show than Criminal Minds, I would go, they would have to have been trying to set something up and it got kiboshed. And maybe that's exactly what happened. Maybe
they were setting something up
and CBS standards and practices said, no, you can't do that.
I mean, maybe.
Criminal
Minds.
Although
okay.
it isn't as if we haven't had before in this show, except it was just like a one episode. Oh no! Oh shoot!
I'm
remembering this wrong, because what happened is that you had on NCIS New Orleans.
Oh,
you had this basically. Well, she was not at all like Tara Lewis. She was much more nice about everything, and she was, and the rest of it. But she had been a psychiatrist who had been in a relationship with the FBI for years, okay, and years and years, and she'd been murdering. She'd been a serial killer. I mean, that's what she was doing, right? Is
right.
And it turned out she'd been a serial killer all along, and I can't remember. I mean, I think it might have been in the first or the second season. So it was pretty early on in. And I think that who knows? I don't think that this show. They might have been told, or somebody just nixed it, or there's just the drive to write generic episodes anyway, so you make a generic person.
Yeah. And that really frustrates me, because, I mean, the show, like I said, it was never going to be Hannibal, right?
You know,
it was never going to be Hannibal, but it could have, you know, they could have done something interesting.
You see,
it really could have been interesting.
No, it is strange, because that is whenever you see little glimmers every now and then of what the show could have been.
Yeah.
And why it's so sad that it wasn't. And but people sort of still watched it, and it's and you will have known by now our responses to the last season.
Yeah.
So it's
by the way, am I the only one who finds it at all strange that they gave her the same last name as Mr. Scratch? Like, you had to know you were bringing Peter Lewis, Mr. Scratch, back after that first episode. And yet they give another character the same last name.
Maybe they're related.
That would be a nice twist.
And then we could go with psychopaths are born, not raised.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. That would be a fair way.
You would be even better than that. They're related. And it turns out that she has this successful career and everything else, because like we could really build this up if the two of them are related, because I hadn't thought about that. Like, but they had been separated at birth or whatever, right? and he goes off and has this horrible upbringing, and she manages to have this very successful life. And yet they're both have this same psychopathic problem in their brain, right? And so this would be your proof that it takes upbringing to make a serial killer.
It would be the one. The one slight issue is that we know that both her dad and his dad had the last name Lewis. So it would be kind of hard for, like, if they had the same mother, that would be fine.
No, she might not have ever changed her name.
No, but my point is, we meet her dad, but
that doesn't mean,
and her brother, all of whom have the last name Lewis as well.
Okay, yes, but that doesn't mean that her father didn't screw around on her mother.
And yes, but Peter Lewis would look. Peter Lewis would have looked a lot less white if that had been his father. We have to assume Peter Lewis's actual father.
Yeah, but we can fix all of that.
We can fix all of that.
We can
fix all of that later. Yes. Yeah.
No, because there. But that's not exactly. That's.
Well, no. But my point is, the only way would be if they had the same mother. But then, if they had the same mother, they probably wouldn't have the same last name.
No,
because we never meet her mother.
No, but even never mind. We'll talk about this later on. It's an interesting idea.
No, I just thought it was funny that it's like in the same way that when they were going to fire Thomas Gibson at the end of season two, they added another character named Aaron.
They didn't
fire Thomas Gibson, and they ended up stuck with two characters named Aaron. And the same way, like, you got these two significant characters in the show, both of whom have the last name Lewis.
By the way, this whole genetic thing that you're talking about, that it wouldn't be possible. First of all, Criminal Minds wouldn't have cared.
That's true.
You never know. This idea may have crossed somebody's mind, right?
Who knows?
I mean, if you assume that they actually thought they were going to do something interesting with Tara Lewis, like you're suggesting.
Yeah,
but they wouldn't care. I mean, the genetics, they find...
Well, no, but honestly, you're right. They only introduce her, what do you call it? They only introduce her dad in season 12. So you're right. They could have had the same dad. She could be Peter Lewis's half sister had they wanted to do it.
Yeah, had they wanted to do it, and they would have just put somebody else. So then it would have been her dad who was
right. It would have been her mother who was, her dad would have been the same dad as Peter Lewis. And and of course, I mean, we're going a little nuts suggesting that that's something they could have wanted to do. But you're right that is something that had they wanted to, they could have done.
Yeah.
It's so weird that they have the same last name. They just introduced, the Mr. Scratch, and then suddenly you got another character with the same last name. Although the other more likely possibility is it's Criminal Minds. They forgot Mr. Scratch was a character that existed.
Yeah, and what
which is just as likely. And it's like, and they only call him Mr. Scratch. They rarely call him Peter Lewis. I always call him Peter Lewis for reasons that I'm not sure why, but they only ever call him Mr. Scratch.
He has a name. He doesn't. He's
a real person. He's not a monster.
And he's not a logo or whatever we want to call him.
Yeah, he is not a brand. He's a person, and he is a person named Peter Lewis who chooses to kill people and, takes on the persona of Mr. Scratch, but he's still just a person, fundamentally.
Yeah.
By only referring to him as Mr. Scratch, you
dehumanize him and elevate him to demon, super demon villain status.
Level. Yeah, which he doesn't deserve. He's just a guy who was molested as a kid and has lived in denial so hard that he wanted to get revenge at all the people who harmed his abuser. He's one of the more tragic figures in the history of the show. A guy who was abused so hard that he spent the rest of his life at the people who made his abuse stop.
Yeah.
That's a lot of abuse.
Yep.
All right. So I guess that's that. It was a fascinating episode because it's the one that cemented in my mind that Tara Lewis is definitely a psychopath. And that has colored every interaction the character has had with anyone for the rest of my time watching the show. So if you wonder why I'm so hard on her from now on and how I haven't in the past, that's why. Let's move on to... What are we watching next week?
What's
our homework?
Our first Dirty Dozen episode, Target Rich.
Which one is Target?
This is Rossi's daughter, a pattern of the same.
No!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and the worst episode in the world. Yes.
And then Morgan getting the warning about the Dirty Dozen.
Yes, of course.
Okay. And then I don't remember what this is at all. Reed discloses a piece of unfortunate news to a returning JJ.
Oh,
I think
they were starting his mother's stuff isn't working anymore. Because remember, Reed leaves a lot this year. So I think this is where they're starting his mother's getting very sick and he's going to have to be on the road a lot.
Yeah, he's down in Las Vegas a lot.
A lot. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, next episode is Awake.
So that's episode 8 is Awake. Which one is Awake?
Phoenix, Arizona men are abducted. One is found dead. Killer deprives his victims of sleep. Oh yeah, you remember.
That's the episode I'm talking about where Tara murders a guy. Yeah. All right, next up.
JJ deals with stress of raising two children. Hotch takes desperate measures to protect Garcia.
All right.
And then I'm going to have to read these. Well, these ones aren't too bad though.
No,
Internal Affairs.
Oh, the worst episode of the year. I'm actually going to say that a lot this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're.
And the crazy part is, I'm always going to mean it.
Yeah, when you say it, and then you got, but at the end of the year, we are going to have to decide which one is real.
That's going to be such a challenge.
Yeah. Not the first year that we've had the challenge of trying to figure out what's the worst episode, because so many of them are bad. and maybe one or two are halfway reasonable, and they kind of get the 3-star rating in a, yeah. And the rest of them get a 0 and a 1. You know,
there's you're making a strong point. All right. Okay, yes, join us back here next week for episodes 7 through 9 of season 11. It's basically, I'm just going to say it right now. The rest of the show is a toboggan ride straight down a steep hill. And then we're going to get to episode 1504 and be like, oh, I remember how this show could be good. And then that will just be a little bump. And then
you see, what happens is that there used to be a hill. Well, there still is that the same hill is still there. But we used to go tobogganing down this hill. And at the bottom of the hill, there was a street, right? Oh, and then across the street was a train yard, right? I just see this tree, this show going down that hill, and it was steep, right? And I don't know how our parents let us do it. I don't think our parents knew we did it. But you take your toboggan and go on the hill. They eventually put fences up at the bottom of the hill and stuff, so you had to run into a fence. What we call them are snow fences. Right. Okay. So you don't ever hurt yourself. There's not a real fence there. Yeah. But anyway,
it's just a thing to keep you from going out into the street.
Yeah. You could go down there and into the street and under a train. Right. That's where this
show. Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess we're going to get to the end. We're going to get to the last episode and be like, and that's going to be the big question. When the toboggan got to the bottom of the hill, did it then get hit by a train?
Yeah.
That's going to be the real question.
All because you brought the toboggan ride thing in.
How could I not? Sure. It's the best description for what the show is. It is just a straight downhill quality thing the entire rest of the series.
Did it cross the road and miss the truck but got hit by a train?
All right, so we'll see you back here for that. For now, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here next week for those episodes. If you're listening to this on a podcast client, be sure to give us a rating because that helps people find the show. See you back here for that. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.